Check this out. I only have 5 spots left already for Elevate 2026 at the time I'm recording this. I only invite 10 men each year to go with me on this epic year-long coaching adventure of brotherhood and deep transformation, and this is my 6th year. If you've heard of Elevate before, or maybe this is the first time, but you're wondering whether this might be for you, know this. The men who do Elevate have typically achieved some level of success in their lives, yet still feel unfulfilled. They're men committed to rising above the distractions and compulsions, sabotaging them from living their fullness as men. And they're eager to be better husbands, better fathers, friends, bosses, just better men in truly meaningful ways. Elevate 2026 includes personal coaching with me for the entire year alongside a select group of men going through this experience with you. We also meet in person for an epic 5-day retreat in the North Carolina mountains about halfway through the year. You will be challenged to go beyond your comfort zone, but that's where the magic happens, where real change happens. And you'll be stepping into an inspired brotherhood with men who have your back and who will become your brothers for life. This journey helps you connect to and more fully live your deepest life purpose, more fully offer your authentic self, your unique gifts to your loved ones, to your community, to the world. Intrigued? Learn more. And if you dare, apply now at brianreeves.com/elevate. Now, this isn't for everyone, but if you think it might be for you, apply now. Just take the next step. This could be one of the greatest gifts you ever give yourself. 1 year. Real brotherhood, radical growth. Go to brianreeves.com/elevate. That's Brian with a Y, reeves.com/elevate for details and to apply. Remember, I've only got 5 spots left, so do not delay. All right, let's dive into today's episode. Welcome to Bridging Connections, formerly known as Men This Way. I'm your host, Brian with a Y, Reeves, former U.S. Air Force captain turned author and professional coach to men, women, and couples. Alongside me as co-host, my lifelong friend of over 40 years, Tate Arendt. Here we have the raw, real conversations we need to be having about the topics that matter most: relationships, purpose, health, spirituality, and more. Please subscribe to stay connected. All right, let's dive. It's not the end of everything, it's just the end of everything you know. Those words are a song lyric that I heard while I was driving halfway across the North American continent for the 5th time in 3 years, just this past week, seeking yet again the elusive promise of home. It's not the end of everything, it's just the end of everything you know. Welcome to Bridging Connections podcast with Brian Reeves. I'm Brian Reeves. This episode is going to be a little different today. It's just me. My normal co-host, Tate Arendt, is not with us today. I also don't have a guest. And I'll be honest with you, I can't remember what episode this is, but I've been podcasting for 4 years. A lot of my episodes have a guest or my co-host Tate. That's really my preferred way of doing it. I'll be honest, doing it by myself is my least favorite way of doing this podcast, because here's the truth of it. I am a very relational person. I come alive in conversation. I love responding to questions and asking questions. It's so interesting. I'm also very introverted, though. There's a bit of a paradox with me. I'm very introverted, but I'm not very talkative. You know, my wife and I, we joke a lot because our phone conversations are so awkward. We've been together for 10 years and our conversations on the phone are always so awkward because I'm not very talkative. And I realize that that contradicts what I just said about being so relational and coming alive in conversation. Well, wasn't it Walt Whitman who said, "I contradict myself"? Well, so be it. I contradict myself. I contain multitudes. All that to say that recording myself, maybe let's say it this way, recording myself doing a solo episode, it always feels very awkward to me. I've done it a bunch of times over the years. Not my favorite way of doing this, but you see, here's the thing. this past week and this era of my life, like I'm going through a major transition in life, a major developmental stage shift, and really I'm going through the death of a dream. And that's what I want to talk about in this solo episode. I want to talk about the death of a dream and that experience. I'm 51. Boy, I've climbed a lot of mountains in my life. And when we're young, we tend to have a lot big dreams, right? I mean, if we're dreamers, if we have any kind of ambition or desire, we dream of having a certain kind of life, a certain kind of intimate partner, a certain kind of job or career path, et cetera, et cetera. And I think what comes for all of us humans is inevitably the confrontation with the death of a dream or many dreams. I mean, it might even be the death of the dream of relationship that maybe you've been in for a long time, and you realize maybe intimate relationship or even family relationship, and you realize, wow, this is never going to be the thing that I've dreamed of. I think that this is one of the great confrontations that all humans, if we're paying attention, we will come to face at some point in our lives. I don't care who we are, how successful we are, how much money we make, what family we were born into. It's just the nature of being human. And in my case, you know, this past week, just to tell you a little bit of the story, this past week, as I said, I drove halfway across the country from Austin, Texas to Los Angeles. It was actually my fifth time, I think I said this, my fifth time in 3 years doing a cross-country drive looking for home, the elusive promise of home. My wife and I left Los Angeles in 2022 amidst the great pandemic migration, right? When so many people were shifting away from large metropolises like ours towards smaller nature-adjacent cities, towns, and rural areas. In our case, we got on the cattle train headed for Texas. Many of our friends, well, my friends really, and that's important, they were my friends, they were already setting up homestead there, boasting tales of quaint country living and wildly affordable housing, at least compared to LA. And for 2 years, we gave Austin a spirited try. Yeah, Sylvie even made a few new best friends, as did I. But in the end, Austin wasn't for us. You know, we're just not Texans. I'd actually been warned by an old Texan oil man, a coaching client of mine I was coaching at the time when we decided to move. And I told him, hey man, we're moving to Texas, so I guess we'll both be Texans now. To which he responded, I'll never forget, you know, the sound of his voice. He was that old Texan draw, and he was both respectful and resolute when he said, no, you might be moving to Texas, but you ain't going to be Texan. Not for a long time. And he proved correct. We are Texans, and Texas just wasn't for us. And there's a lot of reasons for that, which I don't really want to go into. That's not the point of this podcast. The point of this podcast is to acknowledge and to talk about the death of a dream. I spent this last week shoving a 4-bedroom home's worth of furniture into a storage container. I had to give away a lot of things that didn't fit inside that 16-foot by 8-foot container. You know, this is the first house I'd ever owned, and boy, was I eager. I'd never really had the ambition to own a home before, but I felt so much actually excitement and pride. Like, here I am, like a king with finally my own castle to care for and tend to, and man, did I tricked it out. Like, I got all the lighting situation all around the house figured out, all the technology dialed in, from the garage door controllers to the automated sprinkler to, you know, all of the camera systems, and All of that. I even built spent almost 20 grand on a backyard stone patio, building this beautiful stone and rock fire pit patio, and with plants planted throughout the backyard, and a little herb garden planters. And anyway, it was my pride and joy. And then life threw us curveballs, as life does. And we realized this just isn't our home, and we need to leave. And so, this final drive back to Los Angeles was really the final act in the death of my dream. And inside of that, it's like, boy, oh, there's just so much more. In the dying of a dream, there's like just it just seems like endless. I had to give away a lot of my things, including one of my prized writing desks that I had bought. I'd bought it in LA, but it came from Indonesia, and I really love that desk. But I'll tell you, and this is one of the first lessons of this experience, is I'm 51. I've lived a lot of places, and I've moved so much that I've never really accumulated a lot of things that are meaningful to me. A few things here and there, like my writing desk, some paintings and photographs and pictures, maybe some little trinkets here and there, mementos, but not really any big pieces of furniture that I love. Or, but I'll tell you, when I had to give away in the last 5 years, let me tell you, I have bought five mattresses. My wife and I are two people, and I've bought five freaking mattresses because of all the places we've lived, because of also wanting to have beds for guests when they come over. And I gave away three of them. I gave away all three mattresses that I had in Austin, and because they wouldn't fit in the container. But I'll tell you, I was about 90 minutes away from all of those floods that were happening in Texas this last week. The tragic flooding that so far has claimed over 100 people's lives, and it seems the death count is just going to continue to go up. And it was really helpful in clarifying, helping me feel gratitude to just have these things to be able to give them away even. And a lot of the people that I gave them away to, they had stories themselves. One woman, her mother had been hit by a car, and the king mattress that I gave her for free, and this is a really good mattress in good shape, this mattress was going to help her heal and help her convalesce in comfort, and I felt good about that. Another man also was decorating an apartment for his mom. There was a young man who had just moved to Austin and was getting his life started, and he took my writing desk and also another mattress. And again, it just felt really good, actually, in the letting go of these things, to know that even though there was a very precious part of me that wanted to live the dream of being able to have all these things, to have a home where my wife and I would raise a family, and where our friends and family would come to visit us and stay with us. And even though I was really having to let go of that dream, that in my letting go, and believe me, I want to say letting go with grace, but I assure you, there was a lot of kicking and screaming, a lot of hell no, I won't go, in my body, out of my mouth, over the year or so that we made the decision to leave Texas. I mean, I did everything to not go. I wrote my congressman. I lit candles at churches. I prayed to saints. I did some shamanic rituals. Stopped short of voodoo. Ain't trying to hurt nobody, but I did not want to leave, and I certainly didn't want to come back to LA. But at the end of the day, I just had to accept that my wife was not, she was not doing well in Texas. I'll come back to that in just a moment, but I want to just share that there. I was able to really feel just gratitude and grateful that I had things that I could give other people to help make their lives a little bit easier, even as my dream was dying in its death throes, really. It was kind of packing up the house and giving away things that wouldn't fit in the container. And oh boy, let me tell you, I came moments away. There was a moment where I was defeated by the whole experience on moving day. I just was defeated. I had hired some movers to come in and help, and they got me 95% of the way of loading up the container. And they're like, all right, buddy, we got to go. And, left me with some things strewn about. They had another job that they had to go to, and I guess they had overstayed their time with me as it was. And I was just defeated. I just felt defeated just by the whole thing. I was ready to give up. And I had this table that was given to me by my mentor, John Lee, that was bought as a gift for him by Robert Bly. Now, if you know, you know. Robert Bly is like the godfather of men's work in the West. He wrote the book Iron John, an incredible, incredible man. And he was very good friends with my mentor, John Lee, who also is an author. And John gave me this table that Robert had given him. As it's not a particularly attractive table. It's just a little fold down wooden table with two little wings on either side that fold up. But I had dreamed of having men's gatherings around that table. And in my moment of defeat, I was ready to give that away also. I was defeated. There's just no other word for it. I felt defeated. And then I talked to my wife, and she, thank God, talked me out of it. And so I found a way to get it in the storage container. And I'm so glad, thank God, so glad that I took it. But we left Austin because I just had to accept that, you know, my wife is it was not the right soil for her. Like humans, we're like plants, right? We need to be potted in the right soil to thrive. Look, some of us may be hardier than others and more resilient and be able to thrive in a more of a variety of places and conditions. My wife wasn't made for Austin soil. It just isn't her land. To be honest, it isn't mine either. I probably could have stayed and eked out a good life there, and not eked out, but I could have made the most of it. I've lived a lot of places. But it wasn't right for my wife, and it even proved bad soil for our dog, who she developed aggressive skin allergies in Texas that she's still battling. But nonetheless, despite my resistance, I just had to accept that Sylvie's vision for our lives, especially after all the loss that we had been through, and I think we did this with our therapist a couple months, maybe 6 months, a year ago. But we had been through 18, we counted 18 significant losses, that just one or two of those alone, it would be enough to devastate a person and rock the foundations of a couple. 18. So after all that we'd been through, I just had to accept that Sylvie's vision for our lives was just clearer, stronger, and even, dare I say, better than mine. Because the truth is, I didn't have a clear vision for us anymore. In a way, I'd run out of dreams. But I give myself grace for that. Because after all, it's difficult, if not impossible, to dream when you are deeply grieving. So there it was, right? This drive back to LA. Gosh, I don't know. Feels like a crossing of a threshold. One of the things that has been so of vital importance for me over these few years has been the practice of grief, of learning how to grieve. The author Stephen Jenkinson, who wrote a book called Die Wise, he said very correctly, I think, that we are a death-phobic and a grief-illiterate culture. death phobic and grief illiterate. I'll tell you, at the start of all this, I had no idea how to grieve. Everything in my body told me grieving is not safe. It's not safe to be sad. It's not safe to cry. Get some good thoughts in your head and carry on. You know, keep calm and carry on. That just was not going to work for me on this journey. I've had to really learn over these past 5 years how to be with the heavy feelings, be with the sadness, be with the loss, be with the frustration, the heartbreak of life. I'll tell you, I'm not one for regrets, but well, I don't look. There's only one regret that I have in this whole experience. Was it 2022? So 3 years ago, really 2021, we made a big decision to leave Los Angeles, as I've shared. We gave up a lovely house in Los Angeles overlooking the valley. It was spacious, beautiful. It was like an old kind of, it almost felt like a cabin in the middle of the city, but it was lovely. Had this green door that was like had this kind of Irish cottage vibe. It had a big Viking stove in the kitchen, had two fireplaces. I loved it. Giant oak tree in the backyard. I just absolutely loved it. And we gave that up. And as hard as that was, I don't regret that. I know that we had to leave. I know that Sylvie and I, we had to go on this adventure, but we made one major, I won't use the word mistake because we just couldn't have known at the time. But if there's one thing I would have done different, it was I wouldn't have bought our house in Austin. That one choice where we bought at the height of the Austin market, like the hottest market maybe on the planet, and we bought at the tippy top of that market. If we were to sell that house now, we would probably lose about $400,000. $400,000. We can't sell the house now, just to be clear. We tried for the past months. We put it on the market and couldn't sell it. And so now we're renting it. We're taking a big loss every month on the rent. As the gap between the rent and the mortgage. But that one decision alone it continues to have impact on our lives. Again, that's just one of 18 things. You know, the Los Angeles fires, those threw us for an entire loop because we didn't have a home in LA yet when the fires hit. And so we had to actually go back to Texas for like 4 or 5 months. Anyway, it's just been nonstop. And there's just being with the feelings, the grief, the you know, I've spent all of this time these last couple of years. I mean, I've shared earlier, my wife and I also have been on a journey of discovering we can't have a child together. That too has just, I mean, been so much cause for grief and sadness and it's just been a profound grief journey. And that's one of the things that I've really had to put into practice, that honestly, I think what I was getting at is, you know, the one thing that I might change, I regret buying that house. I'm gonna just call that right out. Cause a part of me also knew I didn't want to buy that house. I wasn't in love with it. I was riding other people's enthusiasm. But it doesn't matter. We did it, and now, right, it's mine. It's mine to hold, and my wife's as well. The consequences of that I wish we hadn't done. But there's another piece to this that I wish 5 years ago, or no, I guess it's 2021, when I was really suffering in LA, the pandemic had hit. I really wish that I was better at just being with what was coming up for me. At being with my feelings, being with the heaviness, I was already going through grief before we even left LA. I I do wish that I had the presence of mind before we took such drastic action to be with all that I was experiencing, and not just think that leaving, rushing off was the thing to do to assuage, I suppose, my stuff, what I was going through. So that's been one of the great lessons of this journey is really learning in my body the importance of being with the feelings, the loss, the grief. You know, Francis Weller, who wrote a beautiful book titled The Wild Edge of Sorrow, reminds us in that book that everything we love, we will lose. Absolutely everything we love, we will lose. And there's this other beautiful idea. I'm not sure who said it originally, but grief is the price we pay for love. Grief is the price we pay for love. So if we are going to have an open heart on this planet, just today I was working with two women in two different coaching sessions. One woman who's experienced a lot of betrayal in her life, and another woman who just, I mean, both of these women love so big. They love so big. They have such big hearts. And on the other side of loving big is massive heartbreak. Massive heartbreak. That is the price we pay for love, is the heartbreak. One of my friends, Brooke Weinstein, she did an Instagram post sharing how she just sent her sons, I think they're around 10 years old or so, maybe 8 and 10, and she was at the airport with them, putting them on an airplane to go off to, I think, some kind of summer camp, and she was bawling her eyes out. This is the first time they were getting on an airplane to go somewhere without her, and she's bawling her eyes out, and I wrote to her and said, look, this world is hard on moms because the very thing that you want to see happen, your son's growing up, will also break your heart. So I think, you know, this grief journey, learning how to grieve, I think when we're younger, we have so much hope and aspiration. I don't know how true that is for today's generation. I mean, the world is just looking fucked in a way that it didn't when I was growing up. There still seemed like a lot of possibility. These days, there's so much upheaval. I know that a lot of younger people may be more pessimistic, but there is still in the youthful ideation of things, this idea that we can have the life we dream of. And I think in many cases, we certainly can. But life will inevitably break our hearts. Life will inevitably turn out in ways that we didn't plan for, couldn't have seen coming. We'll make choices believing one thing is true, only to discover that a whole other path is laid out that we couldn't possibly have known life would have us walk. And on my arm, I have this tattoo. I got this tattoo in the last 6 months. And it's a beautiful tattoo. If we ever cross paths, please stop me and please ask me about it. I love talking about it. But there's a three words tattooed as part of it in an ancient language, Elder Furhark, an ancient Icelandic Scandinavian language. And the words are command, surrender, and breathe. This journey has been a PhD plus level journey of surrender. Not surrender in the cynical sense, right? Like those few moments where I was defeated and I was just like, fuck it, I'll give away even one of my most prized possessions because this is just too big for me. I can't manage anymore. Not that kind of surrender. But I mean the kind of surrender that is a willingness for life to go in directions that you wouldn't have it go, right? Surrender as a willingness to be in partnership with life, to not merely dictate how things should go. You know, the first word in that, this is my spiritual practice, what I tattooed on my arm, command, surrender, breathe. and that word command, right? It starts with command. It's like, okay, be clear. Let's be clear on what you want. Dare to dream. Dare to dream and dare to speak out that dream. Right? A dream can't die if you don't dream it in the first place. And, you know, I know that it can be tempting to say, well, then why bother dreaming if it only may die? Well, that's a cheap way out. That's the coward's way out, in my opinion, in my experience. Like, we're humans. We're dreamers. So let's dream. And that's the command, right? What do you want to see? You know, in my case, the dream that I was dreaming was, I dreamt of raising kids on a tree-lined street in a neighborhood where they could, you know, safely walk themselves down to the local swimming pool and run around on summer nights collecting fireflies in jars, ride their bikes along wooded trails that snake behind homes. You know, I wanted that life where I could open the front door at dinner time and holler off their names into the settling dusk to come home. And that was my childhood, at least the better parts of it anyway. And I wanted that for my wife and I, and for the child that we had hoped to have, right? That was my dream. That was the dream that took us away from Los Angeles. Cause I didn't believe that we could have that here. And that was my command, right? Life, bring me that experience. And we did our best. To create that, to bring that into existence. And this is where the surrender part comes in, because there's only so much say over that I have, right? I mean, life has its say. And one of the big things life had to say is we, Sylvie and I, we don't get to have a child together. Not one that's born of our own DNA. And as devastating as that's been, you know, it's brought us into another layer of questioning, of inquiry, I should say, and surrender. Well, okay, then, you know, does life want us to adopt? Do we want to adopt? Right? I don't know that we have full clarity on that yet. It's a dance that we're doing, I think, as we still come out of the grief journey of infertility. But this is the surrender practice, right? And also breathe. You know, the breath, allowing the breath to be full and relaxed and still, allowing the body to be still. This is the path of allowing, of partnering with life, of what surrender, not surrender, not a cynical surrender. In cynical surrender, we hold our breath. We constrict our bodies. We collapse into anger, resentment, frustration. But in spiritual surrender, in full breath surrender, we're like Bruce Lee said, we're like water. We flow with the movements of life as it would take us. We dance with life as it shows up. And so, you know, this is the practice that I've been in, that this experience has really called me to in these last last few years. There may be a little sound in the background. Hopefully that's not, there's some men doing some work outside. Hopefully it's not distracting or you can't even hear it. But I want to just finish by telling you a little story that happened in the final few days of us moving out. You may have seen, I did a video of this on Instagram. But I told you earlier that I had spent like $20,000, really just creating a beautiful backyard. And one of the things I did is I had dreamt of having a crepe myrtle tree with purple flowers. And so we planted one, and it was a fairly young tree, so it didn't flower the first year that we planted it. And then we moved, we left. And I was kind of heartbroken because, well, first off, all the other plants that we planted, they died in the Texas heat like within 2 months after we planted them, you know, $5,000 worth of plants were dead because of the heat. And because we left pretty quick after that. And I don't know that I watered them well enough. Again, I was in grief and transition. And anyway, as I said, we came back to LA, or I'm sorry, came back to Texas because of the LA fires and trying to get the place ready to sell. And still the tree never fruited. And I was just convinced I will never get to see this purple crepe myrtle tree flower. But then check it out. The very last few days I was there, I think the last day I really noticed it, when I was like within hours of getting ready to leave to drive, the container was packed and I was just doing my final cleanup in the house. Well, wouldn't you know it, that crepe myrtle tree was flowering, purple flowers. I was ecstatic. I felt so grateful and so relieved. And even though, you know, I thought that I planted that tree for Sylvie and I, and for, you know, the family that we would raise. And life clearly had other plans. And even as my dream, the death, my dream was dying, right? I was living through the death of that dream. There was another family coming in. They've actually just moved in the last couple of days into the house. There was another family, a young family, that's also wanting to start, a couple that just recently got married and is wanting to start a family. They were coming into the house, and I reflected on the beauty that they were going to get to experience through that purple flowering crepe myrtle tree that I planted for them a few years prior. And I felt a lot of gratitude about that. There's this old saying that's attributed to ancient Greece, that when old men, let's see, the saying goes something like, when society becomes great, when old men plant trees under which they will never sit in the shade, but others will. I mangled that saying, but you get it. When you plant trees for other people to sit under the shade that you may never sit under, that's when society becomes great. And I thought about that, and I thought about the gift that I had left, and even just being a good steward to that house and taking care of that house. Yeah, I felt gratitude in that. I felt grace in that, and I felt surrender in that. And so that's the question that I want to leave you with. Where might you be living through the death of a dream, or perhaps resisting the death of a dream? I know for a lot of people, it happens relationally. Maybe we're wanting a certain kind of relationship with our father or our mother, and it's just never going to happen. And that might be the death of a dream that we're either living through now as we're waking up to it, the reality of what is in that relational dynamic, or maybe we're still resisting it, still hoping that dream will come true. And the question I want to leave you with is simply, how might you meet this death of your dream with more grace, more ease? Not saying it's easy, but more ease, and perhaps even more gratitude, right? Maybe even just acknowledging the gift of getting to love for a moment, of getting to love the thing you're either losing or realizing you may never have. How might you meet it with more grace, more ease, and just a bit more gratitude? Thanks for listening. I'm Brian Reeves. This is Bridging Connections with me, Brian Reeves. See you in the next one.